You're listening to the Vineyard Milwaukee podcast. For more information about Vineyard Milwaukee, go to vineyardmilwaukee.com. Now, here's our podcast.
Welcome. Glad to see all of you. Welcome if you're with us at home, if you're with us in the room. I'm happy to see your happy faces today. For those of you who are either visiting or newer to our church, you might not know that in the basement of this church, for decades, I believe, St. Vincent de Paul Society, who owns this building, has been running a meal program. And they used to actually have people come in the building, but because of the pandemic, they started just actually handing meals out. But for years, people would actually come in, and they'd have just volunteers come every week and serve the meal and help, you know, have a nice hot meal. People would come around with coffee and juice and milk and all of that. Well, at some point, Dave and I found out about the meal program, and so us with some of you in this room and some other friends would come on a kind of regular basis to help volunteer and serve and clean up and things like that and get to know some of the people that came. And I remember the first couple times I came, I remember feeling a little overwhelmed by what just felt like the weight of the need. Just a lot of the people and the families that came in. I just remember some of the addicts that would come. I just remember a woman just kind of covered in sores and was just so out of it. She literally could barely like lift a fork of food to her mouth. And I just remember some of the things I was seeing felt really discouraging and overwhelming to me. Like just kind of the level of need of lots of marginalized people in our community that were just a few miles down the road from where I live. And, you know, I wonder if you've ever had that experience. It might be right here in our city. I know we have several Milwaukee Public School teachers. I was one myself, and I know you've had that experience sometimes where you just feel like there's like too much need in my classroom or there's too much need in this school. And it just feels like too big for me. I don't feel resourced to handle this need. It might be something you've experienced if you've ever traveled overseas. Maybe you've gone to a highly impoverished country, and it, you know, somebody that's struggling with hunger or clean water or just like general housing and just even just general like need for food, water, and shelter weren't being met. And you just thought, what could I do? This problem is immense. This entire country needs support. And you just walked away feeling like so helpless and powerless because the need was just way beyond your resource or what you felt equipped to do anything about. Like, what can I do with a problem this big? Or maybe it's in a really personal way. Maybe God's asking you to hold something that you just don't feel equipped to handle. Maybe he's asking you to stay in a difficult marriage or parent a challenging child, or you're facing a health situation that there's no real medical solution for. And you just think, this is too big. I'm not equipped to handle the weight of this need that God's asking me to hold. Or maybe you feel called to a people or a place that just has too many problems. Maybe the problems in our city just feel too big. You just don't feel like you have the resource for it. Maybe God's inviting you into something like serving the poor or working with exploited children or women in the sex trade industry or to support refugees or, like I said, to serve a failing school system. And you want to help, you want to make a difference. You feel grieved and you carry God's burden for these people or this city or this country, and you have these dreams in your heart of what it could look like. But it just feels way too big for you. This dream just feels so far out of your reach. And the more you step into it, the more overwhelmed you feel and under-resourced and ill-equipped to do anything about it. Anyone feel this way? Like, is this just me? I actually live here. Like, this is actually my where I live all the time. But that's another story. But what do we do? What do we do with that tension we carry? What are we meant to do with that feeling of, I see this need, I'm grieved by it, I want to step in and help, but it just feels too much. God asks you to stay in this marriage and not just to survive, but to thrive. God asks you to continue to love and intercede for that wayward family member. He asks you to forgive that person that really hurt you. He asks you to stay connected to the bride, to gather weekly with your brothers and sisters, and to invest in relationships, even though the church is dysfunctional and disappointing. God's inviting you to serve youth or calling you to take more initiative in your neighborhood or your workplace, to be invitational or hospitable, or he's burdened you with a burden he carries for a marginalized place or people, and you really want to do something, and you feel inspired to do it, but you begin to step in and you just get knocked on your butt. So you try harder, and you get more anxious, and you feel more out of your depth, so you try harder, and you get knocked on your butt again, and then ultimately you just feel like a failure. And you decide, I must not have what it takes. Or you think about the need or the commitment you feel called to, and you're like, dude, I am barely keeping my own head above water. I'm exhausted. I am depleted. I have my own problems. I don't have the energy for this. I just don't have anything left to give. In fact, I'm pretty sure, Jesus, you're asking me to do something that is outside of my reach, that I just can't do. And you kind of imagine that this thing that God's inviting you into is literally impossible. And I want to suggest today that this conclusion you've come to is, in fact, correct. What if God is asking you and inviting you to do the impossible? We're going to take a look at a story today that those of you who've been around the church for a while are probably familiar with in Luke. And we've been talking, as you know, about parties for a while, parties that Jesus attended or would talk about. We've been kind of gleaning things from these parties. And last week we talked about kind of an intimate dinner party. But today we're going to be talking about a rager. This is like a huge party that actually wasn't even planned but kind of formed organically. And so look with me at the story. It's found in Luke 9. This actually is one of the few miracles that actually appears in all four Gospels. So this was a really big one. There's a lot that we learn from this miracle. So look with me at Luke 9, verse 10 through 17. It says, when the apostles returned, they reported to Jesus what they had done. Then he took them with him, and they withdrew by themselves to a town called Bethsaida. But the crowds learned about it and followed him. He welcomed them and spoke to them about the kingdom of God and healed those who needed healing. Late in the afternoon, the 12 came to him and said, hey, send the crowd away so they can go to the surrounding villages and countryside and find food and lodging, because we're in a really remote place here. He replied, you give them something to eat. They answered, we only have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, unless we go and buy food for all this crowd, which was about 5,000 men. And just so you know, this was a patriarchal society, so they only counted the men. There was likely about 15,000 to 20,000 people there. But he said to his disciples, have them sit down in groups of about 50 each. The disciples did so, and everyone sat down, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke them. Then he gave them to the disciples to distribute to the people. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 baskets of broken plate pieces that were left over. I just want to kind of set the scene for you if you're not familiar with this story of what's been going on right now in the life of Jesus. So pressure's been mounting, political and religious pressure, and if you are familiar with scriptures, you know John the Baptist was Jesus's good friend and cousin who was kind of preparing the way for Jesus, and he was just recently beheaded by King Herod at this point in Jesus' journey. And this is both foreshadowing the death that's coming to Jesus, and this is pointing to the mounting pressure that's happening right now amongst the political and religious, because Jesus is getting really popular and really big, and crowds are coming. Additionally, the other kind of big thing that just happened is these 12 disciples that have been, and some of the women that have been following Jesus around and watching him do miraculous things, do really cool things, Jesus has just sent them out on their own. He gives them power and authority to heal the sick and drive out demons and to share the good news that the kingdom has come. So they have gone out and on their own, apart from Jesus, like done the things that Jesus has been doing. So they're pumped. I mean, they've been basically put on a missions trip that went really well, because now they've they've seen out of their mouths and their hands the prophetic come. They've seen power come, and now they've come back. They're like, Jesus, let me tell you about all the cool things that happened. And Jesus is currently grieving and mourning the loss of his cousin and friend, and he knows his own life is coming to an end soon. So there's a lot of intensity coming. So that's why Jesus is like, let's get away for a little bit. We need to rest and we need to regroup. But man, the crowds find him, because these people are hungry and thirsty for the kingdom. So they find him, and Jesus has compassion on them. He actually, in another version, says they're like sheep without a shepherd. And so he comes back and he heals their sick and he starts teaching them, and the crowd forms. And so there's this enormous crowd here. And so the crowds find them. He has compassion on them. The disciples, just returning, are full of faith. Their faith has been stirred up. They've seen these really cool things. They've seen works of power. So you imagine their faith level's high. And yet, then Jesus presents them with a task that feels out of their reach. So look with me again, verse 12. It says, late in the afternoon, the 12 come to him, because they're just being realistic. They look around, they're like, oh, okay, we got to do something about this crowd. We can't feed all these people. So they say, send the crowd away so they can go to the surrounding villages and find food and lodging. And then he replies, you give them something to eat. And what do they do? Well, they reply, without a kingdom lens, just looking very realistically, like, what? We only have like a meal for like barely us. We've only got we've like enough for a couple of us to eat. We've got like 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Like, what you're saying doesn't make sense. And I wonder how many times we find ourselves when we're facing a need or a crisis, we are like the disciples. We completely forget all that God has done before. They've been with Jesus. They just went out and did these amazing things. But of course, Jesus presents them with another impossible task, and they forget everything that's just happened. We immediately go into problem-solving mode. First, they're like, send the people away, right? Like, we just have to fix this problem. So Jesus, the crowd's been here for a long time. We need a practical solution. You know, how many times are we in that position? Jesus, I just sent my son off to a college I cannot afford because I thought that you told us to do. I thought you led us this way. But now I'm panicking. I think I need another job. I think I need to play the lottery. How does this work? I completely forgot all the ways that you provided for us over and over and over again in creative and extravagant ways. Jesus, I know you told us to come to this city in a very prophetic and powerful way, and I know this was your idea, and I know this is your agenda, and I know you said that you will build your church, but now I feel like it's all on me to figure this thing out, and it feels totally impossible. And I forgot that it was your idea, and that you've guided and provided the whole time. We forget. We look at the need in front of us, the impossible task, and the kingdom lens just falls from our eyes. And we just think, what can we do? This is too much. This is too big. This is impossible. And then Jesus says something interesting here. He doesn't just say, all right, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. I know you're just a powerless human, and I've come from God, so watch as I amaze you with what I can do. No, he looks at them and says, you give them something to eat. Now, I love this because, of course, we don't get all like the nonverbal exchange here, right? We just get like the basics from the text. So we have to kind of imagine some of the nonverbal exchange. And I'm going to assume here, because Jesus is a master teacher, that he used like the classic wait time. Anyone who's been trained as a teacher or even like a spiritual director knows that you ask a question, you're supposed to, if you get no answer right away, you're supposed to let the silence linger. You create the wait time. Why? Because that's when the wheels start turning. That's when the light bulbs start going out. You have to create space for people then to own the question and begin to really process it. But often in our anxiety, we want to like fill in the blanks quickly. We don't like that wait time. So imagine Jesus added a little wait time here. And I wonder what's going on in their head. At first, they're probably looking at each other like, he's not making sense. This is all we have. We only have these 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Like, This doesn't, what he's asking us to do doesn't make any sense. Is there another possibility here? With kingdom power, could something unexpected happen? Something creative? Something miraculous? We've actually seen Jesus give blind people sight. Hey, we just actually put our hands on people and saw them healed. Wait a minute. Let me think about this for a minute. And the kingdom lens starts to form on their eyes. They start remembering, that's right, the kingdom has come. The kingdom is here. Anything is possible. So their faith is stirred. The kingdom lens is coming back on, but they still need their shepherd, right? They still need some direction. They still need to be told what to do. So he says to the disciples, have them sit down in groups of about 50 each. The disciples did so, and everyone sat down. Taking the 5 loaves and 2 fish, he looks up to heaven, gives thanks, and breaks them. They gave them to the disciples to distribute to the people. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 baskets of broken pieces that were left over. Now, I want us to consider 3 things as we reflect on this miracle of multiplication. Miracles of multiplication are initiated in the heart of God. God chooses to partner with us to feed the world. And 3, the food is for you as well. So 1, this miracle was initiated in the heart of Jesus. It said, as I said earlier, that when the crowds learned about it and followed him, he welcomed them and spoke to them about the kingdom of God and healed those who needed healing. In Matthew, when Matthew is telling the story, it says, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. In Mark, it says, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. So this started with Jesus' compassion. And many theologians actually think this story really harkens back to Psalm 23. If you're not familiar with it, it says, the Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And just so you know, if you're in a space where you're just, your soul is hungry and thirsty, like, this is a great psalm to just meditate on. And this is what Jesus is doing. He's having them sit down in the green pasture as he's feeding them, as he's leading them as a good shepherd. And so he sits them down, he heals them, he feeds them with his words, he feeds them with food until they are satisfied. And of course, all of this foreshadows that eventually he'll be feeding them with his body. The impossible things God calls us to are always initiated by him, by his heart, his compassion, his agenda, his love that drives it and empowers it. And if he initiates it, we can have faith that he will produce the means for multiplication. The disciples didn't have to figure out how to feed all those people. They just had to obey and trust their shepherd. 2, God chooses to partner with us to feed the world. Jesus could have just taken care of the crowd's need all on his own. In fact, it would have probably been simpler to do so, right, than to involve the disciples. But for some reason, it's God's pleasure to partner with us. This is how he's chosen to usher his kingdom into the world, through intimate, life-giving relationship and partnership with us. So this miracle multiplication was as much about the disciples and his relationship with them as it was about the people they were feeding. He wanted them to do it. Why? Because he knew it would be their joy. It's his joy, and it was their joy. You know, there's actually no greater joy you can experience on this side of eternity than partnering with Jesus to usher in his kingdom, partnering with the Holy Spirit to usher in miracles of multiplication. The disciples were like, all we have between us are these 5 loaves and fish. And how often do you feel that way? How often do you feel like all I have is like a little bit of time? A couple things I'm good at. I get like one creative idea a year. Or maybe you're just like, all I have is a messy house and an unruly toddler and a headache. Like, I've got nothing really, Jesus. Like, this hot mess you're looking at, this is it. And Jesus is like, that'll do. That'll do. All I need from you is your yes. All I need is your obedience. It's not your job to produce the miracle. Jesus produces the miracle. The kingdom grows and multiplies in hidden and creative and unexpected miraculous ways. This is not for us to worry about. We just simply do what Jesus says. The disciple, Jesus is like, here's what you do, guys and girls. Have them sit down. Here's how this is going to work. It's actually not that complicated. Is it challenging? Yes. We live in war times. It is challenging, but it's not complicated. So he says to his disciples, have them sit down in groups of 50. Everyone sits down, taking the 5 loaves and 2 fish, looking up to heaven, and gives thanks and break them. Then he gives them to the disciples to distribute to the people. So as a side note, this instruction to sit down in groups of 50 like this, this is actually an invitation to a meal. This is actually an invitation to a communal shared experience. This wasn't just, let's just like fill the hole in their belly so I can keep doing ministry. This was like, let's sit down as family and share a communal meal together. This was primarily the way, and is still primarily the way the kingdom advances and spreads in small, hospitable, intimate communities. Now, what's interesting here is that the food doesn't multiply until the disciples start to give it away. Until they're actually physically handing the food away is when it starts multiplying. It's as they are going that the miracle of multiplication happens. Many of us often want to wait until the move of God happens before we take a step into something. We want to wait for the miracle to happen so that we'll have our faith to then put our hands to the things that God's inviting us into. But that's usually not how it works. Usually the miracle doesn't happen until the disciples actually follow Jesus' instructions, took a risk, and started giving away the measly little offerings they had in their hands. You might feel an invitation to share your faith with someone or to pray for a neighbor or coworker, and you're thinking, man, I really don't know what to do or say or how to start. This feels scary. What can I do? And Jesus is like, just go. Just show up. I'll supply the power. I'm the one that transforms lives. I'm the one that heals. I'm the one that delivers. I'm the one that multiplies the food you bring. But you got to bring it. You got to give it away. Remember when I was talking earlier about in the beginning, how overwhelmed I felt when we first started volunteering at the meal site. It was just all the need. And I started to, one day we were here, and a student named Vernon that used to be at the school that I used to teach at, he wasn't in my class, he was across the hall, suddenly showed up at the meal site with a slew of younger kids following him in. And when I was teaching fifth grade, he was in fourth grade, and he was one of those kids that kind of got in trouble a lot. He was often getting in fights and known as one of the troublemakers of the school. But when he showed up, he was, I think, in sixth grade at this point with all these younger siblings with him. He was so mature and responsible because he brought his brothers and sisters to the meal site every night for dinner. And he was the oldest, and he was the one that brought them all. And I was like, Vernon! I was so excited to see him. And so we hung out and had dinner, and I started to feel an invitation from God to start really developing relationships with the kids that were coming regularly to the meal site. And so we would just hang out, get to know them, and over time I started to feel, we were kind of getting ready to take our youth group kids to camp. So there's this really expensive, idyllic camp in East Troy that's very expensive to go to, but they used to offer this week called Urban Camp, where at a very, very reduced rate, they would have kids from the city come, and you would have to just provide your own counselors. And so we had taken a group of our youth group kids the year before, and we were going to do it again that year. And I was feeling led to include some of the kids from, a little too soon, Caleb, but that's okay. You can just leave it up there. You're perfect. You're awesome. Thank you. He does know the dramatic timing. He's a film major, so perfect. I just felt led to be including some of the kids from that we're getting to at the meal site to Urban Camp. And so we started to, talk to the kids, try to get paperwork filled out from their parents. Some of the parents didn't speak English, and so it was a bit challenging. Like, I'd go and sit in their house and try to, have the fifth grader, sixth grader translate for me and get paperwork filled out and all this kind of thing. And honestly, we didn't feel really resourced to do this. We needed counselors. We needed money for the camp. We needed money for, turns out, lots of supplies that the kids didn't have. And at the time, we didn't even really have a church. So we had literally no money, no resources to do this. But I felt God prompt me to move forward with it, and so I did. And so as we were kind of trying to get it all together, we ended up getting a counselor from a couple women from our home church back in Columbus volunteered to come. And we got some local guys come. So we got some counselors that volunteered. And right about the time I'm panicking to get money, unbeknownst to me, somebody that was sort of partnering with us had raised all the funds. She just forgot to mention it to me. So I'm having, panic attacks. And she's like, I've got tons of money. I'm like, awesome. So we got enough money. And so the kids show up, and some of the kids didn't even have bathing suits or sleeping bags, literally. And so I remember one of the moms of one of our teens that had more means ran to Target, bought all the stuff they needed. We just figured it out, and God just supplied everything we needed. So the only thing that was a big bummer to me is that Vernon and his brother didn't show up at the time we were meeting to leave for camp. And it makes sense, they're kids, and I'm not sure how involved the parents were in even knowing anything about when they were supposed to meet us. And so it makes sense that they would forget the meeting time. And so we get all the kids to camp, and a couple of kids didn't have a few more things, and so I'd gathered some more supplies, and I was on my way the next day to take the last bunch of supplies to camp. And I just felt this impression in my spirit to run back through the neighborhood one more time before I headed back to camp. So I just pull into the neighborhood, and I just circle around, and who do I see? Walking down the street, selling water bottles, but Vernon and his brother. And so I just pull up, and I'm like, Vernon, where were you? We left for camp yesterday, and, I have your paperwork. I thought you were coming. He's like, can we still come? And I'm like, get in. And literally, we run to his house. He grabbed some stuff and got in, and I was able to take him to camp. And so, yes, here's a picture of our crew from camp that summer. And so, the miracle of multiplication, just to be clear, is not always neat and tidy. I'm sure that feeding 15,000 people was a little noisy and messy and complex, even in the midst of that miracle. It can be challenging and messy, and it's no less miraculous and beautiful. This is what it looks like when the kingdom comes to earth as it is in heaven. And finally, remember that the food is for you as well. It says in verse 17, they all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. Now, for those Bible nerds of us, we know that the 12 basketfuls have some significance in representing the 12 disciples who represent the 12 tribes of Israel. But the fact that everyone ate and were satisfied, and there were still leftovers, just points to the extravagant grace and generosity of our God. We are his children. We are Jesus' brothers and sisters. We are all at the house. We're all at the family dinner table every night, eating with the family, having dessert, playing Settlers of Catan. We're at the table every night. And in Isaiah 25, pointing to the great feast that is coming, it says, on this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich foods for all peoples, a banquet of aged wine, the best of meats and the finest of wines, on this mountain, he will destroy the shroud that enfolds all people, the sheath that covers all nations. He will swallow up death forever. The sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. He will remove his people's disgrace from the earth. The Lord has spoken. So we live simultaneously in two worlds. We're like, there's a great book called Resident Aliens. We're like resident aliens. We live in a world, yes, that is currently full of poverty and depravity and despair. And we sit at the dinner table every night with the King of Kings, enjoying the best meats and the finest wines. There is enough food for the world and for us. Jesus knows his disciples need to eat too. He's not looking at the world with all its immense problems and saying, come on, your little first world problem pales in comparison to this. These are real problems. I can't take care of world hunger and the clean water crisis and the war in Ukraine and heal your body and heal your marriage and provide a better job. Come on. There are priorities here. No, God says everyone ate and was satisfied. And I provided such an abundance that we had leftovers. We had food to spare. My broken body and my shed blood has enough power to solve world hunger and attend to your chronic anxiety and attend to your marriage and attend to your body and your longings and your desires and your struggles with your family of origin and your struggles at work, whatever it is you're facing. My body, my blood is enough for all of it. Everyone ate and was satisfied. And so in closing, I just want to take a few minutes, and I want us just to ask the Lord to speak to us. I'm going to ask you just a couple questions before we go back to worship and spend some time in ministry. And so if you want, you can just close your eyes. And you might have an immediate thought to this, but maybe the Holy Spirit will illuminate something for you. And the first question I have is, where are you hungry? Where do you need food from heaven? What part of your life do you need fed? Let's just sit with that question for a minute. And the second question I want to ask you, and this is where we really might need the Holy Spirit to illuminate something for us, is Jesus says to you, as he said to his disciples, you give them something to eat. Who is the them for you right now? Who is God inviting you to give something to eat to? So in a minute, I'm going to have the worship band come back up, and we're going to enter a time of ministry. But, you know, there are always seasons in our lives where sometimes we don't feel like we even have 5 loaves or 2 fishes. Our hands feel completely empty. And yet, I think that these two questions are before us all the time. In actually the seasons where my hands felt the most empty is sometimes when I was actually giving things away. I wasn't even probably aware of it. It's often our weakest point that God is actually multiplying what feels like nothing out of our hands. And so this is always the question Jesus is asking you, is where are you hungry? Like, where do you need me? Where do you need fed? Where do you need shepherding? He wants to shepherd your heart and invite him into those places. And then he's always saying, you give them something to eat. While you're eating, you give them something to eat. Like I said, you can bring that hot mess, and God's only asking for your obedience. That's all. It's really simple. It's just your obedience to whatever he's calling you to do right now, right in front of you. So it may be very personal for you right now. It might be right at home, what he's asking you to do that you're under-resourced for, and he's saying, I bring the miracle, you bring the obedience. I bring the miracle, you just bring the obedience. And it might be something a little bigger. God gives me dreams that are way out of my reach. And that's okay. I can't produce it. I just do the next thing he's asking me to do. And so during ministry time, what I want to invite you to respond to is, if there's an area that really just shouts out at you, I need food. I need miraculous food from heaven right now. I need the miracle of multiplication in this area. This is where I need shepherding. This is where I need food in my soul. Let us come alongside and ask God to put power on that, to multiply that. And for some of you, God might have highlighted a specific them for you. It might be a people group or a place, might be a person that God's inviting you to take a step into. And we want to come along and ask God to put power on that as well, to help give you a very clear word of what the next step was. For the disciples, it was just have the people sit down. Here's your next marching order. What's the next thing that just God's asking you to do right now toward the thing he's calling you, the people, the place that he's calling you to? So if either of those or both spoke to you, please come back and get prayer. There'll be some of us back here in the corner. Be happy to pray for you. We'd love to come alongside of you. And then if neither of those words specifically spoke to you, but you need prayer for something going on in your body, in a relationship, anything that's happening, we would just love to pray for you. We've got plenty of time. So please come back and receive prayer.
Thanks for listening to the Vineyard Milwaukee podcast. For more information, go to vineyardmilwaukee.com.